by citing the Lord's version, text 34, part A. These are the most, some of the most important verses of the entire Bhagavatam, and the previous chapter, text also was a very long purport. Srila Prabhupada emphasized, so that it was divided into three, so this also will be divided into three parts. So I will read the first part. So please repeat after me. Ritirtham yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidya datmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamah. Ritirtham yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidya datmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamah. Ritirtham yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani sadvidyadatmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamah. Na pratiyeta chatmani sadvidyadatmano mayam yatha vaso yatha tama te satyati pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyadatmano mayam yatha vaso yatha tama. Matajis, Ritirtham yati pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyadatmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamah. Ritirtham yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tad vidyadatmano mayam yatha bhaso yatha tamah. Rite, without. Artham, value. Yat, that which. Pratiyeta, appears to be. Na, not. Pratiyeta, appears to be. Cha, and. Atmani, in relation to me. Tat, that. Vidyat, you must know. Atmana, my. Mayam, illusory energy. Yatha, just as. Abhasa, the reflection. Yatha, as. Tama, the darkness. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Purport. In the previous verse, it has already been concluded that in any stage of the cosmic manifestation, its appearance, its sustenance, its growth, its interactions of different energies, its deterioration and its disappearance, all has its basic relation with the existence of the personality of Godhead. And as such, whenever there is forgetfulness of this prime relation with the Lord, and whenever things are accepted as real without being related to the Lord, that conception is called a product of the illusory energy of the Lord. Because nothing can exist without the Lord, it should be known that the illusory energy is also an energy of the Lord. The right conclusion of dovetailing everything in relationship with the Lord is called Yogamaya, or the energy of union. And the wrong conception of detaching a thing from its relationship with the Lord is called the Lord's Daivi Maya or Mahamaya. Both the Mayas also have connections with the Lord, because nothing can exist without being related to Him. As such, the wrong conception of detaching relationships with the Lord is not false, but illusory. Misconceiving one thing for another thing is called illusion. For example, accepting a rope as a snake is illusion. But the rope is not false. The rope as it exists in the front of the illusioned person is not at all false. But the acceptance is illusory. Therefore, the wrong conception of accepting this material manifestation as being divorced from the energy of the Lord is illusion. But it is not false. And this illusory conception is called the reflection of the reality in the darkness of ignorance. I repeat, and this illusory conception is called the reflection of the reality in the darkness of ignorance. Anything that appears as apparently not being, quote-unquote, produced out of my energy is called Maya. The conception that the living entity is formless or that the Supreme Lord is formless is also illusion. In the Bhagavad Gita 2.12, it was said by the Lord in the midst of the battlefield that the warrior standing in front of Arjuna himself, and even the Lord had all existed before. They were existing on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, and they would all continue to be individual personalities in the future also, even after the annihilation of the present body, and even after being liberated from the bondage of material existence. In all circumstances, the Lord and the living entities are individual personalities, and the personal features of both the Lord and living beings are never abolished. Only the influence of the illusory energy, the reflection of light in the darkness, can, by the mercy of the Lord, be removed. In the material world, the light of the sun is also not independent, nor is that of the moon. The real source of light is the Brahma Jyoti, which diffuses light from the transcendental body of the Lord, and the same light is reflected in varieties of light. The light of the sun, the light of the moon, the light of fire, or the light of electricity. So the identity of the self as being unconnected with the Supreme Self, the Lord, is also illusion. And the false claim, I am the Supreme, is the last illusory snare of the same Maya or the external energy of the Lord. The Vedanta Sutra in the very beginning affirms that everything is born from the Supreme, and thus, as explained in the previous verse, all individual living entities are born from the energy of the Supreme Living Being, the personality of Godhead. Brahma himself was born from the energy of the Lord, and all other living entities are born from the energy of the Lord through the agency of Brahma. None of them has any existence without being dovetailed with the Supreme Lord. Om Agyan Tumirandasya Gyananjana Shalakhaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savaduktam Harijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamsh Hare Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Saptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindhuvaevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. We welcome you all to this the Srimad Bhagavatam class, especially those who have come from outside in this challenging climate. So, very inspiring. So, in continuation of his very special verses, the purports of Srila Prabhupada, that he's really put so much emphasis. So, in this particular purport, we see that the central point that Srila Prabhupada makes is that we are anything that is not in relation with the Lord is illusion. It means we are, if we are unconnected, any activity, any thought, any action which is not connected with not in relation with the Lord is illusion. So it's a very sweeping statement, and but at the same time it is a reality, and actually it sums up practically the whole Krishna consciousness in one line. If you had to say that Krishna consciousness means consciousness of Krishna everywhere, it's the same thing. Another way to say that, if you accept Krishna everywhere, then we see everything in relation to Krishna. So we often hear this phrase, this part of the shloka, padam padam yat padam satesham, that there's danger in every step, right? We hear that in particularly in connection with how this material world, we have there could be danger on the road, there could be danger of disease, danger of certainly there's danger of old health, and we will certainly be temporarily here. So there are all kinds of dangers which are there. But actually the biggest danger is the danger of our consciousness being affected, and that we go into illusion. And that is something also again very subtle. By the very nature of illusion, illusion itself is so subtle that we don't recognize it, that we also don't recognize that how in our, when we talk of dangers, we always look at, because we're trained to see everything in a gross manner, something which is very tangible, which is very, where you can outline the contours, but something which is where, if our mind is actually not only just flickering, but actually drifting away, we don't see that danger. And His Holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj says that particularly for devotees, you know, he cites that illusion can be in two forms, or the Krishna, you know, creates this illusion in, or allows. One is the, for those devotees, for one is the devotees who are he allows the illusion, illusory energy to take over, primarily for the as a lesson to all of us. Like in Arjun's case, in Arjun, clearly by all accounts, his upbringing, his closeness to Krishna, his part of being the Pandav family, and the kind of the way they accepted the challenges in their life, which were unimaginable, the difficulties they had. Throughout, he never wavered from his loyalty and deep affection and love for Krishna. In fact, we know that the Pandavas, they had every right to, they were so close to Krishna, and Krishna had openly expressed his love for him, for them right through, even before he went as a peace messenger. So it would have been quite natural for them to even ask that, Krishna, can you help us, do something, why all this? They don't even ask anything. So such a person, when he gets into so-called illusion on the battlefield, it is a lesson that we, for all of us to understand, and how we can also be caught up in that situation, and our mind also can really, when we move it away from Krishna. So, in this situation, Arjuna is not seeing Krishna as in control of everything, till he is reminded. So, Arjuna is playing that role to let us, through him, understand that Krishna is in control of everything. Whatever he does is perfect. Just because we do not see it the way we want it, doesn't change anything. So, and if you were to see, in our own lives also, when talk of illusion, in Arjuna's case, he was already, a pure devotee, and Krishna says, you are my friend, and that's why I'm revealing this confidential secret to you. But in our case, we don't need to go beyond anything. We just have to introspect and see that before we came in touch with ISKCON, before we came in some understanding of the philosophy, at least today we have an understanding, even if we have difficulty in following, but the philosophy is clear. But just imagine, just before that, what was our life, what was our aspirations, what was our thinking, what was our dreams? We were also an illusion. So we don't look at it that way, that when you look at illusion, we think like it's a magic, and something comes out of thin air. But actually, our minds also, and we could also go into, we also go into illusion on and off today. But at least if we, as long as we associate with devotees and associate with Krishna's paraphernalia, Krishna's deities and philosophy, and take guidance from Guru, even if we are drifting away, we have every chance that we can come back. So that is one type, and the other is that when Krishna allows that the illusion to, for the improvement of that individual or that personality who takes deeper shelter of the Lord and then gets comes to the Lord, even if they have gone into illusion for some time. And of course, these are many instances. Those who come back to Krishna, those who are accepting that I can see that is Krishna's arrangement that we have in this challenge. And so even if we have moved away, we come back. So this is something which is very commonplace. But if you take in Shastra also, we have the example of Bharat Maharaj. Bharat Maharaj was a great king, went down in history. But at the same time, he renounced everything and went to the forest. But there he got attached to a deer, and then at the time of his departure, he was in that mood of such deep love and affection and compassion for a deer. Those were his last thoughts. So the next life he became a deer. But because he had such a pure life, so he had the consciousness of a human being. So even as a deer, he remained with himself, and because of that, after that, from that life, when he went to he departed this world as a deer, then he was given the chance to, was given the birth in the family of a Brahmin family, and then he was called Jad Bharat, because he was completely determined that he didn't want to be affected at all. So all his actions were entirely to see that he doesn't, he doesn't have any pride, he doesn't cross anyone. He was so extra careful. So and then we see that even in that, the kind of treatment he had, he almost was killed till Kali intervened and saved him. Even then he didn't flinch. He was about to be, the sword was on his head practically. It was on his head actually. And he was just moments away, and Kali intervened and got saved. And then when he wandered back to forest, and then King Rahuguna was, he was called in to pick up the palanquin. There also he was, because he was so conscious of every living entity, his whole consciousness was so charged up with Krishna consciousness. That means everything connected to Krishna, every living being connected to Krishna. So he didn't even want to hurt the ants. He didn't want to see that he, by his own actions, as much as possible, he would not want to affect anyone. So he was also walking in such a way to avoid that. That was his consciousness, not that to see the comfort of the, that was secondary. So naturally, King Raghuguna was upset because the, when four people are carrying the palanquin, if one person is going on his own trip, then naturally the balance is upset. And so he got very upset and he gets so angry, insults him. And he just bears it. And then, but when he speaks, when Jad Bharat speaks, he has not spoken in his entire life, this particular lifetime, he didn't speak a word, even though he has so many realizations. And externally he looked like a vagabond, practically, you know. Nobody could imagine. But when he spoke, within moments, Raghuguna, King Raghuguna, he was also a great personality. Even though he was covered temporarily by his own, you know, because of his own status and his own expectations. So immediately I got down and considered him as guru. So this is an example of where we see that Jad Bharat, because he got attached to the deer and he was given a chance to come back, and then, you know, in this third life, he became extremely... such a great example that this is one of the major stories in the Bhagavatam. So, and what does it demonstrate to us? That, you know, Prabhupada says that we should not become spiritually lazy. So, we generally associate laziness with inactivity. It is not necessarily. Spiritual laziness can be hyperactivity. In fact, many times we are very active in so many things. But all activity which doesn't connect to Krishna is spiritually lazy. That means we just want to do, we want to enhance our material goals, that becomes predominant. If we have to sum up it, we can say that spiritual laziness is when our major resources, including our thinking, our willing, our mind, our attention, our anxieties, eagerness, if that is putting the predominant prominence to material goals. You know, if we have various responsibilities, but the predominant responsibility gets secondary, and the secondary responsibility, that is the material focus, becomes the most, then where you can, especially when you're in the mode of passion or mode of ignorance, then that is spiritual laziness. And that is what Prabhupada says, that we learn from this that we should avoid that. Unfortunately, we see that we have various philosophies, even our own leadership in our country, when after independence, the so-called leaders at that time. I remember when I started my training in the factory in Mazgaon. So I remember the general manager sitting there. He had a signboard on his table. This was maybe 1974-75, saying that, quoting the first Prime Minister of India, that the factories are the temples of this world. So I was very impressed. I said, this is a nice coin phrase, you know, factories are the temples. Factories are the modern temples of the world. So it was a very dangerous statement, saying that we want to first, promoting atheism, the temples have no value and the actual temples are the factories because they create jobs. But when we see that what factories have created, pollution and so many things, not that we don't need them, but the consciousness is clearly anti, and this statement was entirely against the principle of Krishna. And the same leadership was also promoting work is worship. So initially, again, that was something which is very nice sounding. There's a word worship, and then like we had work temple. So superficially you feel that you're connecting the two, but actually you're actually, it's a blasphemy, because when you talk of work is worship, that means we are saying that any work will do that doesn't happen, there's no connection, that includes just keep working and increase the mode of passion to the extent that you look at your own internal, your own aspirations and goals. That means you are on your own individual, you are a master of your own destiny, and that is where the There's no room for, you don't have to look at Krishna. But Krishna disagrees. Like he's the source of all truth. And he says that work done in consciousness of me, in devotion to me, will free you from bondage. All other work is incriminating work. So he is actually contradicting, or rather, he's already made the statement. So unless we look at from the scriptures point of view, we have every danger. So this is an illusion which so many people get into, because there is a certain, I would say, perverse logic, because people are suffering. People see that, okay, if I get a job, I get an income. So that is legitimate. But then slowly and subtly putting that in ahead of need for Krishna means that actually and even if you see our entertainment and media and all, the way they project that, so they downplay and they criticize, they blaspheme our culture. So in this way they gradually promote this, and then we get into it. And when I look my own life, and I'm sure most people, not just devotees but others, especially when you have such great dramas and such great cinemas, the great movie makers of the 50s and 60s, so when I look back, I mean, their artistic brilliance, but they all had complete atheism. All of them. I don't want to mention names, it is a Bhagavatam class, but all that. And they're promoting entirely, like, slowly, you know, when they look at removal of poverty, which is, of course, a very good aspiration to try to see that we can help. But the way it was always projected, there's always the typical villains, usually the village pandits, the one with the choti, you know, how would they put in a very subtle way. So this, how people can, and if we follow that, we can also go into illusion. But Arjun, what did he do? He learned from Krishna, he heard Krishna, and he accepted it instantaneously. I mean, in 1.5 hours, the dialogue that was there, and that is in Bhagavad Gita, is for eternity, but also that from his point of view, he completely changed. So, and Narad Muni also tells Vyasadeva that, you know, in this endeavor, even if you have a fall down, you know, Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita, even if you have lost something, it is only a temporary loss, because the spiritual gains are always there for us. So even in devotional service, now we may think that once I've come to the temple, physically I am in a safe environment, and therefore psychologically, mentally, I am completely now safe. In one sense, yes, but the mind has its own life, and it can be, and it is in, it is within us. So it is our, it can be in our control, or at least we are in control of what kind of thoughts, aspirations, we have, what do we think about, and therefore we are not also exempt. Devotees are not exempt from illusion, because clearly externally we can be doing something, internally we may be thinking something else. And yesterday our Deen Bandhu Prabhu gave a very nice Deen Gaurang Prabhu gave a very nice class where he gave an example of this. The Brahmins and the Patnis. The Brahmins were extremely learned. They were so close to Krishna, but when the Gopas were hungry, they were so bogged down in the rituals. So they were pious, and they were certainly in the sattvic mode. But when it came to the crunch, they didn't differentiate between, they couldn't understand that Krishna is actually, the rituals are only a stepping stone towards understanding Krishna. While the Brahmin Patnis, who are not academically literate and not scholarly or not shastrically inclined, but at heart they understood and they knew the service to Krishna is uppermost. So Maya's business is to steal whatever propensity we have. So it's always going to do. It's going to be. It's not like a battle like we have the Olympics coming up. So, okay, then it'll get over in, say, a month's time. So, you have a crescendo, and then you have the finals, and then either you win or you lose, and then it's over. Then there may be next Olympics, and many of these people will not be there. It's not like that. This is a lifelong battle. The minute we are born, till the time we are away, this is going to be constant. So, Krishna himself created it. So, this propensity to steal what we have is Krishna's kindness on us, this illusory energy, that he's also giving us the philosophy, his pure devotee, his own form. We have everything. And then he also needs to test us to see that do we sometimes move away, and if we move away, do we come back or not? So that's why it is that Prabhupada gives the analogy of a person who sleeps with the door open, you know, and then actually the thief will come in, and the thief comes in and steals everything. So similarly, so the only way to avoid it is to close all the doors and windows. So for a sincere devotee, closing the doors would mean following the regulative principles, always associating, striving to act sincerely where Krishna will provide a guru, and then follow in his instructions. So otherwise, without that, you know, it's very difficult, it's impossible. So Sridhar Maharaj, our Sridhar Swami, you know, he gave many talks, and he used to speak also to the business world, because he had created this institution called VAST, which was primarily designed for business people. And this, it was his vision in the 1990s, where the idea was to help bring them slowly to Bhagavad Gita and Krishna consciousness. So he was in touch with a lot of the current contemporary you can say the crutches of the material world, you know, how the world works, how the corporate world works, because he was in touch with a lot of corporate people. So he was talking about the dangers of advertising and marketing. And he said that this is again in the 90s, so we're talking of 30 years ago. Today with social media and all of it, today's situation is much, much worse. But he said that people talk about us, that means about devotees, because he came from the US, and you know, in the US there was an issue about, there was an allegation that you're controlling other people's minds. So he said people talk about us controlling mind, but look who's talking. You know, how they control. I mean, he said he was giving examples of such detailed scientific analysis to do, that which type of ads, which type of color, like for instance the color red for this season will be very prominent for these products. The placement of the products, the background that should be there, you know, everything is analyzed. How it influences a person's mind. So they completely, they kind of control your desires, and they channelize their desires into ultimately what is the goal? To buy something which you don't want. That is the whole goal. That what you don't want, you should buy. So then that's how they would bring in the, you know, the videos, the songs, the jingles, the ads, simply to do those things. So this is so if we are so gullible, if we are naive, and if we just get taken away, you know, we are in awe of this, because it hits us, something which is attractive, something which is very which resonates with us. You know, there's maybe a nice tune, maybe something very attractive. So we may get carried away temporarily, but ultimately, we have to always compare with from the eyes of the Shastra, look at from the eyes of the Shastra, and that is only possible if we keep associated. So we are in that situation, we are going to get buffeted, you know, constantly. We are not, many of us, at least, you know, the progress is going to be that sometimes we are lurching here, sometimes lurching here. But at least coming back is not only possible, but we would understand how we made a wrong step simply by seeing the sheer logic of Shastra, and also the examples that are given in the Shastra, written millions of years ago, spoken thousands of years ago, which actually bring to reality what is happening now. The talk of Kaliyug, and the Kaliyug is already happening now. So therefore we have to be very cautious, and Prabhupada would constantly say that we have to organize our lives, you know, under the supervision of, that's why he created ISKCON, where the whole world can live. And therefore, great devotees would never be independent. They would even, that's why Lord Ram also, Krishna also, when he came, they took a guru. They didn't need a guru, but they accepted, because they established the necessity of having a guru in our life. It's very, very important. But to seek and search for the right guru is most important. Because Maya comes in so many disguises. So that's why the phrase when Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple and complicated for the crooked. So if our mind is crooked, then we'll always complicate things. If we want to, for a devotee, it means that we want to crash in so many things. We will also take, we think that, you know, when I'm following certain principles and that will give me brownie points, and then I will also be doing this and my heart is in this, and that will, but because I'm doing this, it will protect me. So this kind of games that we play, Krishna sees through it, and then Krishna will allow us to think like that because that is illusory energy. So yes, it is something better than not going to Krishna at all. But we also need to understand that what we need to do here, how much we do, what proportion that we need to do, we have to fulfill all our responsibilities. And sometimes when we get carried away, we need to have the humility to understand that we need help to bring back, to come back. Sometimes we are very successful, sometimes something clicks, we are in a very good situation financially, somehow. And we feel that we have really succeeded so well. You know, maybe the stock market has gone up by 50% in 2 years and everything looks fine. So, you know, people can take the foot off the pedal. So, this situation came in there. But the minute, but at least a devotee is one who, when the things become difficult, at least will go to Krishna and say that, Krishna, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, I want to come back. So therefore, that is Krishna's mercy. Then we realize that thank God it happened, because I would never otherwise come to Krishna consciousness. I would never come to you unless you create this situation. So, therefore, this Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. Sadhu represents the lineage, our acharyas. Shastra is all the scriptures. They always say the same thing. The essence is the same. And when we see that, we have faith. And that's how our faith strengthens when we follow the process. Our Sudhi Chaitanya Prabhu, he at once mentioned that, you know, pride is also a lifestyle disease. Because for illusion, you know, when we go on the basis of, when we are proud of our accomplishments, and again, if we take it more for, because we are among devotees, we are all aspiring for the same thing. Therefore, I am saying more from a devotee's perspective, that, when we, the subtlety of, you know, getting pride that we have succeeded in so many things, even in a devotional service, even in our various activities that we do, we may start, you know, then we start becoming competitive, we start becoming envious, you know, even in dressing we may, the deities, or it may be in book distribution, or it may be in donations, but then the element of, and you may say it is transcendental competition. But transcendental competition would mean it is transcendental if we actually are very happy with the other person and does better than us. That is the test. If we feel if, something hurt, if we are upset and our mood is really to try to compete, give a better lecture, someone arranges this program, I will arrange another program. So this kind of thing is something which will also take us apart. So he said that this kind of pride will be is really what takes us into illusion, and it's a lifestyle disease, because just like you measure your blood pressure in diabetes, you know, for those who suffer, this also we need to keep checking the pride pressure. You know, so that's something which we need to always watch out for. And in that relation, Ravindra Swarup Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple, in one article he had mentioned that, so what are the symptoms of the of a person or a devotee who may be going into pride? And he gives eight symptoms. One is a lack of Vaishnava etiquette. But slowly we start thinking that is not necessary, it is, now I'm past it, it is only for beginners, you know, it is too ritualistic or too too formal, etc. And then we just disregard it. So there is a point that we don't live only by the etiquette, of course, but the etiquette is very, very important in so many aspects. Second signal is that we start becoming quarrelsome. He says that that usually happens due to envy. Third is this, I mentioned, competing. When you start competing with each other, that's also a sign that slowly the pride is coming in, because then we are overwhelmed by our own success. We really want to show that, then the mood of service is secondary, and in the service now, we take over. That means I want to excel, and the excelling is very important. I need to, hear my name being announced. I need to see that, know that other people see that he is the one who or she is the one who has done this. So then that kind of competing nature slowly brings us in the forefront. So that's pride. Then fourth is pretending that we are more advanced than we actually are. So we conceal our shortcomings and our secretive mentality. The secretive mentality comes in because we are concealing our actual feelings, and there's a pretense basically that, you know, when we start acting like that, because we think this is expected of me rather than what I am, then there is every danger that we will only be catering to that illusion. Fifth is no association with equals. Basically no association with our God brothers and God sisters, and therefore you don't get any feedback. Sixth is finding faults in others. Tendency to criticize increases. The seven is immaturity by identifying spiritual advancement with organization advancement. That means if I am a member of, let's say you have some position you have been given, you may be a mentor or a counselor, and you are, first of all, you identify with Chopati temple. Chopati temple gets praised, so you think I am doing something. Radha Gopinath Mandir is talked over the world, so I am part of Radha Gopinath, so I am something. It just happens. We have done nothing, but we feel that. We are part of some committee or some, activity, and then because that is doing very well, so we also feel that the organizational advancement means spiritual advancement. And the last is that we start straying away from the path of devotional service. That if our tendency is gradually we avoid taking services and we avoid meeting devotees, we can see a trend. So ideally this is something which is a kind of self-check for us. We internally introspect. But otherwise, even if we allow others to point out, or some close friends or people whom we respect and who notice us and who have a relationship with us where they can speak, that also is at least a safety valve for us. And then the effect is that if we start developing, we've already spoken about that, it attracts, means we start committing offenses, and then Krishna never enters a proud heart. I think it was Sachidanand Maharaj when he said that your heart has to be soft for Krishna to enter. He will not enter into a hard heart. And then he also gives the ABCD of a cure, what he says, four things. A is for awareness, acceptance and appreciate. Awareness starts means you first at least aware that what the problem is. That we are, we start seeing that this is my tendency. Acceptance is that you say, not only you are aware, but you also accept that I am, I need help. And then appreciate means any help that comes in, you take that. You start implementing that. B is for be eager to serve, whether you are in the forefront or in the back. So whatever service, maybe we had this fantastic video which really reflects Radha Gopinath Mandir's strength, on the Brahmotsav. So it really shows that there are so many devotees who have been here for 25, 30 years. Today is Thursday, so I just met a devotee I saw on the video. So devotees are very happy doing the service, coming here, and they are now already in the advanced ages also. They are not looking for, they know they are contented. They are not looking for any external appreciation, though it is our duty to appreciate. But so basically, eager to serve, the mood is to serve, that's it. We want to please others. And we see so many people, that was only a sample there. C is for conscious acts of humility, where we actually, where we put ourselves lower than others, we would like to help. And D is, don't take praises seriously. Very important that people may appreciate, and then we actually start thinking that it's quite deserving, and perhaps she recognizes it late, but doesn't matter, that sort of thing. So Radhanath Swami Maharaj said that the most transformative qualities in a human being are humility and pride, and they're in opposite directions. Transformative means they can change us completely, either for the better or for the worse. So if we are if we are humble, humble is not external. Humble is not when somebody is looking humble. Or, we take a judgment and say, this person is so humble. No, humble is that when, actually sometimes we may not know, but the test when Krishna gives and how the person reacts, that when sometimes you are humiliated and you accept that, like we know some devotees who, Prabhupada disciples who may have strayed away for some time after Prabhupada went, and then when they had some illnesses or some towards the end, and everything went wrong, and then they came back, they just accepted it gratefully, and that was the reciprocation from Krishna and from Prabhupada. So we, it can be both ways. So I just wanted to speak a few minutes. We have just maybe 5 minutes, because today is also the Disciplinary Day of a very, very great personality, Gopal Bhatt Goswami. So he is part of the six Goswamis. Why we talk of these six in a very exalted? They are the most exalted devotees and the key representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And because very often we talk of some of the Goswamis, but some Goswami may not have spoken so much about, at least in, when it comes to, therefore, I'll take just 5 or 6 key points which highlight what is so unique and how the Goswamis gel together so well. First is that when Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami Maharaj was asked to write the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he went to he sought the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas at that time. To each one he went and he took the blessings. So when he came to Gopal Bhatt Goswami, Gopal Bhatt Goswami said that I will give my blessings only on condition that my name should not appear in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now we have to let this sink in, that here we are, all of them knew that this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. And if we have some understanding of what Krishna is, you imagine what their understanding is. And in that, knowing that this is for history, for eternity, not just this, it is for the rest of eternity. His name, and he doesn't want his name to be there. So he has fully understood his position, that he is most contented to be just, though he is an associate, close associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he is just what they claim to be servant of the servant. So that was his an extraordinary action of his. Also, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in 1510, when he was about 26, he started on a South India tour. So in that time, it was a long walk. So when he came to Srirangam and he met three brothers, he met Venkat Bhatt. These were very exalted brothers, all in the Sri Sampradaya, following Ramanuja Sampradaya. So Venkat Bhatt, Prakashana Saraswati and Talluri Bhatt, I think. Talluri. So all of them were very, very happy to see him. And then they specially asked that you please stay at our place for the Chaturmas. So he stayed. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed at Venkat Bhatt's place, and his 7-year-old son Gopal Bhatt. So unlike Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Jeev Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, who they associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at a much later stage, and they came from very challenging backgrounds, different backgrounds. Here, it's a little different, like Raghunath Bhatt Goswami and in Gopal Bhatt Goswami's case, that they were actually, the pedigree was already there, even from a lineage point of view. And then they, so that the 4 months he got a lot of chance to serve, even when he was only 7 years old. There's a lot of affection for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were, it was very sad when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left after 4 months to carry on his tour. And after he went, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, Gopal Bhatt got a dream where, in which it was more like a spiritual vision, and there he got an intense desire that to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And actually, it is said that he was fortunate enough to visualize the entire Navadvip experience. He actually participated in it, entered into it as a participant. So this was quite unique. And in the same dream, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed him that, no, you should stay, because he was keen to come to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, you stay here, serve your parents, and when they're no more, then you can go to Vrindavan and take shelter of Rupan Sanatan Goswami. And then later he took initiation from his uncle, Prakashanand Saraswati, where he learned Sanskrit, grammar, Vedanta, etc. When he went to Vrindavan, he finally took me. He was very lovingly accepted by Rupa Sanatan Goswami. Now, when he went there, it was many years later, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had not met him. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was already in Jagannath Puri. So, he was curious to know. By that time, his word had spread because he was in Vrindavan, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu knew that now he's a wonderful devotee, is famous. But he wanted to know what is he doing in Vrindavan. What actually he had not heard anything because he had instructed him. So he sent a letter to Rupa Sanatan Goswami. He sent a message, and Rupa Sanatan Goswami very happy. They wrote back saying that he is very well settled. He's extremely, he's been telling us all about your 4 months that you were there and all your activities in South India and all the devotees, they mentioned the names of everyone here. So, and he's really now living a life of a mendicant. He's fully adapted to that life. So that letter went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who was very happy to hear that. And he read that letter out to, you know, Haridas Thakur and Swarup Damodar Goswami and all the others who were there, Advaita Acharya, etc. And then he sent a message of his happiness to Rupa Sanatan Goswami and instructions to Gopal Bhatt Goswami in the letter. And also he sent his personal belongings, his own loincloth and some other very personal things which directly for Gopal Bhatt Goswami. So, in the meantime, Rupa Goswami also in the reply when he sent, he told him that he had a dream. That in the dream, his own Ishtadeva, that is Govindadev, came to in his dream and instructed that he wanted Gopal Bhatt to be his pujari. So which Rupa Goswami wrote to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this exchange of letters was very, very significant. Gopal Bhatt Goswami was extremely energized by that. Of course, very humbled and he was very joyful. Of course, he wrote many books and he edited Sanatan Goswami's Hari Bhakti Vilas. He also wrote the foreword for introduction, a scholarly introduction to Jeev Goswami's Sat Sandarbha. And then there are a list of many books. So when his fame had spread all over by that time, and his fame became even more spread when he went to Nepal. Now from Vrindavan to Nepal, you know, in those days, it takes you months to walk through. So we went to Nepal, and then he went to the Gandaki River, and there he found some 12 shilas. You know, these are the sacred stones which are representative of Krishna. So he took them back to Vrindavan. But when he went back to Vrindavan, imagine how much time it must have taken, practically a year going and coming, or several months. But after he reached Vrindavan, he actually was feeling, you know, in his humility that I'm not deserving. Not qualified to serve them. So all the way back he went to the Gandaki River to put them back. And when he went there, he went in the river and he was carefully placing them. But miraculously, every time he put the shilas and they bounced back spontaneously into his hands. So he did it 4-5 times, but they kept coming back. So he took this as a sign that Krishna wants them to worship these shilas. So then he accepted them and then he put them. Then from then on, he always carried them on in his cloth bag, which he kept around his neck. Went all the way back to Vrindavan. Then he was worshipping, and then that went on for several years. This was after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu departed. So this was maybe 10 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left this planet. Now still he had a desire because he had a desire that. You know, he would also like the Govindadev deity, which was Rupa Goswami's special deity. He also felt that he also wanted to. He had that desire as well, that he also wanted to have a deity, especially because one wealthy merchant had come and given a lot of jewelry, clothes, fine clothes, and all ornaments. And the shilas don't have a human form, so he had kept all of them, and he was praying that. In whatever way, someday, whatever you feel is right. And then what happened is that one day in the morning he got up and he saw that instead of 12 shilas, there were only 11 shilas. And the 12th one, that black shila, had transformed itself into an incredibly beautiful deity. And that's Radha Raman Diti, which then the word spreads, all the Goswamis came running there and they were, all gave the blessings, and then he named them Radha Raman Diti. And it is in the same position, same temple, which is all these 500 odd years later, because it's been refurbished, but it has not moved anywhere. And the last key point that he, of course, he initiated Srinivas Acharya, Gopinath Pujari, there's some many other devotees, actually the incarnation of Anang Manjari, who's the younger sister of Radharani, though some say that he's the incarnation of Guna Manjari. So we do understand that Gopal Bhatt Goswami, like the other five Goswamis, each were unique. That all the devotees, all the associates, so there are hundreds and hundreds of devotees who associated with Srila Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were glorious, and all, of course, they were all his associates. But why the six Goswamis were chosen to be the six Goswamis? They didn't choose, but in posterity, because from them all the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were actually spread to various parts. And he was also told by Rupa Goswami that, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had told him in his dream that you, when you go to Rupa Sanatan Goswami and you take shelter of them in Vrindavan, and then through you, your disciples will actually spread the message. Because Srinivas Acharya was one of the three who actually went to Bengal with all the books. That is another story. So, this is, we are very fortunate. Today is the disappearance of Gopal Bhatt Goswami. So, we'll end here. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Bhagavatam.